Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning to the West Coast. Good afternoon to the East Coast. This is Paul Segretto, co-host of Franchise Essentials, franchising and social media at its best. It's Thursday, so we are here live, and I am here with my co-host, Joel LaBava, also known as the Franchise King.
Hello, Paul. Hey, we have to do something about that name, man, of this show. It's too damn long.
Yes, it is something that we started blogging about. We need a new name. We're open to suggestions. But, you know, before we jump into that, I wanted to welcome you back from vacation. I had visions of Chevy Chase as Clark Griswold traveling across America with the family in the family truckster.
It wasn't that dysfunctional, actually.
It wasn't?
No, it wasn't too bad. There was a three-car caravan, a couple of my Italian brother-in-laws and I, and the kids, and it was cool, man. We did D.C. We didn't expect it to be 98 degrees. Well, actually, we did because we keep up on the weather. So it was hot, but it was great to talk to President Obama. That was awesome. And then we went to a place called Deep Creek Lake in Maryland, which was really nice. Now, why it's called Deep Creek Lake, no idea. But anyway, it was cool. Thanks for asking. Good. Back and ready to rock.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad to have you back, and I also want to thank Jenny Dietrich for filling in for you last week.
You're welcome.
I don't know if you knew about her her superwoman injury. She went head over heels over her handlebars. And,
really?
Actually has two stress fractures and is continuing to ride her bike. The doctor said that she should continue and couldn't imagine that any therapy would be as good as what she's doing right now. Thank God she had her helmet on because I understand it split her helmet. And I'm glad she's okay, and she did a great job last week filling in for you.
Yeah, well, I wonder why I have not seen her tweeting away.
Well, I'm just waiting. Well, she's been a little busy, but I'm just waiting for her to show up for her morning bike ride one day dressed up as Wonder Woman, cape and all, because I tell you, my hat's off to her dedication and drive.
She's a strong one.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked a little bit about her her blog last week, FADS. Which is the Fight Against Disruptive Spin at spinsucks.com. And we had a good time. We certainly missed you. We're going to need to bring her back where the two of us are on the show because I think we'll make one heck of a trio.
Hey, I'd be into that. I don't know if I can be as tough as she is, but we can try, man.
Well, anyway, as most people are aware, we are looking at a new name for the show. I want to emphasize that, you know, each week you and I will be focusing on the world of franchising, including franchise blogs, news, and events. In addition, we're also going to explore new and unique franchise opportunities and routinely discuss, I don't know, items of interest to franchisors and franchisees alike. You know, maybe along the lines of traditional marketing, social media, lead generation, or whatever blows up your skirt, Joel.
Hey, I resemble that remark, and I'll raise you $5.
Anyway, they have a couple of announcements. Don't want to lose sight of Made Brigade's $1.5 million veterans franchise giveaway.
Ask me the website name. Don't ask me.
All right, I won't. Because you know what? It's at www.madebrigadegiveaway.com. Hey, Joel, did you hear with Sir Richard Branson of Virgin Records, Virgin Airways, I don't know, Virgin Everyway, everything has offered? Did you hear about this?
Oh, please, share that with me, Richard.
He has opened up a business plan competition for a new concept. The winner gets to meet with Branson, discuss their plan and their concept, and there's even the possibility of funding for the winner. You know what the catch is? You need to make your pitch on Twitter in 140 characters or less.
Oh, that's easy. For guys like you and me, that's easy. But wait a second, though. I don't want any of that. I just want to ride on one of those jets, man.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
I think they have, like, reclining chairs and Swedish stewardesses, or maybe that's another airline I'm thinking
of. Yeah, I think that's a different thing. Anyway, he definitely, in my mind, is the quintessential entrepreneur, and I wish everybody luck. Take advantage of it. I already have. I sent in my 140 characters or less this morning to Sir Richard Branson.
Did you want to send me a link to that so I can try too?
You just do at Richard Branson on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
You no like link. You got to send it directly to Richard Branson.
Because he has an accent, man. That's why you like him.
I guess. I don't know. I also want to remind people we have the upcoming Frantelligence webinar series. You can check the link on my blog site at fmdpro.com. It's going to be an 8-part series. Ginny Dietrich has 4 of them regarding marketing and generating business for locations. I'll be doing 4 parts of the series regarding franchise development and social media together. Also, Joel, get this. I've been asked to speak at the Women's Franchise Network. It's an IFA event in Houston, Texas on September 10th. At ICED headquarters, that's the headquarters of Computer Explorers and Quick Copy and several other franchise concepts. That'll be on September 10th. It'll be a 4-hour event from 10 to 2, including lunch. It's really neat. Profit for Soup organization will be there in the morning talking about the bottom line, and I'll be talking in the afternoon about social media and my e-idea concept, which is my 5 steps towards social media success. I'll be posting more information on that as we go along. You know, last week I posted a discussion on LinkedIn about the IFA group forming a social media task force. Did you and I talk about the social media task force?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, remember? Yeah, I mentioned it in the blog post I just did about our Cutting Edge radio show.
Well, Paul Rocchio of the IFA has responded to me privately that the IFA has formed the task force, and he requested that I call him to discuss further. Right now, we've been playing a little bit of telephone tag, so as I do connect with him by phone, I certainly will report back for next week's show.
Yeah, let me know. Maybe we could kind of tag team it and watch each other's back, you know.
Well, speaking of LinkedIn, I posted a blog article, had LinkedIn run its course, and I also, as I normally do, posted it across several different LinkedIn groups, one in particular on future trends on LinkedIn. It's a group, and wow, it's turned out to be an unbelievable debate. We've had over 35 comments so far.
Wow, it's almost viral.
Almost viral. It actually started out viral in a different sense because I got what I felt was attacked almost immediately upon posting it. And basically, you know, I didn't say anything negative. I was just saying I felt that LinkedIn was missing the boat in keeping up with Facebook because, you know, there's an inability to utilize various applications and tools on LinkedIn. It's very regimented, and it's very two-dimensional. And, I mean, you can't even bold any text within a discussion. And I just put out there that I thought I would like to see some additional features. And within 15 minutes of posting it, basically I was told, you know, move on, stick to Facebook. About this gentleman from Iowa in a Houston group that said he has a tangible service, threw around the fact, you know, hey, how's that social media coaching going for you, and blah, 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 blah. And, well, it kind of got the Italian side of me, which is the entire me,
a little bit
riled up. And actually, in the end, it turned out to be a good discussion trail, and like I said, we've got a lot of people across a lot of different groups commenting on it, and the biggest trend has been in the future trends group with 35 comments. Did you get a chance to look at that?
No, I don't know if they're going to let me in because I'm not looking towards the future right now.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
No, I'm sure. No, I'm sure they'll let me in. They'll be happy to. But I just did notice something on your page, and I'm actually a little resentful. So if anyone is actually listening to the show today, I see that Paul has over 500 connections on LinkedIn. I am a little jealous, a little resentful, because I don't have quite 500 yet. I have 466. So if 41 or 42 of you listeners could join me on LinkedIn, I'd appreciate it, because I can't let some dude in Houston, Texas, win.
Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but I'm at 1,550 connections on LinkedIn.
All right, so if we have 1,583 listeners right now, it'll be no problem.
Hey, you know, talking about you know, connections, membership, what have you, you know, the franchise executives group that I manage on LinkedIn, we are at one or two away from 900. God, it was only a few months ago we were at like 80. So that's a remarkable jump. What's going on in the franchise blog world?
Oh, well, Donald Cranford, who we seem to be talking about every week, maybe he should throw us 50 bucks once in a while. He just blogged about a postman, Mr. Postman, a mailman who just opened a pet franchise. And God knows our Airedale Winston cannot stand anybody in uniform coming to the door. I mean, he wants to just go through the plate glass window. So being a mailman or mailwoman, it's probably a little challenging. But this guy said, you know what? Even though I probably didn't do very well with dogs over the years, I'm going to open up a Camp Bow Wow. So I thought it was a pretty funny story.
That is pretty funny. So he was a mailman and decided to get into business for himself.
Yeah, he probably, you know, retired. It's funny, though, because it says Dennis Diffie and his wife, Carrie, opened a Camp Bow Wow franchise 2 weeks ago. Dennis obviously has, quote, buried the hatchet with man's best friend, who certainly terrorized him during his career as a postman. Pretty funny.
Whose blog was that on?
It was Franchise Direct, if you were listening.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Donald Cranford.
That's right. Yes, you are 100%. Well, you know, there's another one that I've been aware of for quite some time that was started by Amy Nichols, Dogtopia.
Yeah. Matter of fact, yeah, you're right. She's cool.
A dog daycare franchise. Really interesting. You know, speaking of dogs, you know, I gotta make this plug for Dolce Segreto.
That's right. I voted for him or her.
She made it to the third round. Yesterday was her fourth birthday. And she's doing better every week. We've set up a fan page for Dolce, which is still under construction. And we've also set up a Twitter account at Dolce Segreto on Twitter. And
following me.
Yes, she's following you.
She's following me. That's right.
You know what's really great? When I check her Twitter ID, and she doesn't like me to do it often, but when I check
it's
it,
under her tail, huh?
Right, yeah. Even tail. But here's the thing about it that's really great, because there's not a lot of activity on her Twitter ID. I'm able to
see
stuff that I might miss from my regular followers and people that I normally follow. So, stuff, you know, like stuff that you post and stuff that might get caught up in the mix of things. I am now able to see, and I'm really happy about it.
Kind of like that article I just did 2 days ago about our radio show that you didn't know I did.
Yes, I thought that was quite.
Hey, you know, I know you're overwhelmed. You're doing a lot of good stuff on social media. So keep on keeping on. Just remember us little people.
Yeah, we're really excited about some of the new possibilities and new, the new accounts that we've landed and we've been launching for really some unique, innovative franchise concepts. One in particular on the East Coast, well, it's really a virtual company, is MomCore, headed up by Allison O'Kelly. And it's really a fabulous franchise for moms re-entering the workforce after, of course, settling down and having a family. And it's geared more towards moms with professional education and background. And it allows them to work within corporate America again with a flexible schedule. And Allison had the business up and running for several years out of Georgia, where she graduated from the University of Georgia. And it's done well. Allison's now up in Connecticut, and the company is virtual and recently started franchising, and recently, right after their launch, awarded franchises in Atlanta, Philadelphia, and Miami. And we just launched 2 weeks ago a full-blown social media marketing campaign, and it's really been wonderful. And if anybody wants to know more, I suggest you look at momcore.com. Check out MomCore fan page and group page on Facebook, and of course, follow them at MomCore. The other one that we just signed on and we're looking to really roll with is Bee's Barbershop out of Phoenix, Arizona. And it's a really neat
one.
Concept.
How did you get that one?
That was last night.
Last night. Did you know someone or something?
It's really a unique concept. It's really a fabulous concept. They are very, very, very methodical. They're very professional. I admire them a great deal, and they really have a good concept. And
I like those
innovative concepts.
Real quick, maybe I'll call Grego and see if he wants me to help them grow it. I might have a couple interesting candidates for him.
That would be great. I'm sure he would be very interested. Actually, I've been dealing with Jimmy Valenzuela, the founder of the company. Greg, of course, introduced me. Jimmy is just really the quintessential professional, and I really admire what he's done, and I really admire their customer service and the programs they have in place for their franchisees. So this is definitely a project, MomCore and V's, two projects that I'm really, really excited about.
Awesome, awesome. And let me throw a plug in. You mentioned Dogtopia. You know, Amy Nichols and Dogtopia were franchise of the month this month over at the Franchise King blog, interestingly enough. So congratulations, Amy.
And I didn't realize that when I know you had mentioned it once before, but I didn't realize that when I put Amy's name down because I have followed Amy for a while, and the funny thing was, and as busy as we get, and this is something, you know, that everybody needs to think about. You know, sometimes the obvious is less obvious. All of a sudden, Amy's name popped up in the little right-hand corner on LinkedIn, and I noticed the number 2 by her, and I said, I can't believe that I am not connected on LinkedIn with Amy.
It's unbelievable. I know. Yeah, I think I am. I know I am on Twitter. We met on Twitter and exchanged a few niceties. So, yeah, she's cool.
Exactly. So, you know, that's a word of advice to everybody that's out there tipping their toe in the waters of social media. Make sure you do it across at least the three main channels of LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook.
And one other tip, if I could. One other little tip. Most blogs have a little orange icon or a square box that says subscribe or subscribe by email. It's a wonderful concept. If you subscribe, you won't miss articles, right?
And it's really simple, right?
Yeah, even I can do it.
Really simple syndication, right? Okay, on your blog, you mentioned something about franchise math. And that
franchise mathematics, yep.
That's not the math that George Bush talked about, the fuzzy math or anything like that, is it?
Hopefully it's not the math that my daughter and I struggle with, which is why she has a tutor, because I can't keep up with 7th and 8th grade math anymore. So, no, this is a little more basic math. This has to do with, let's see, there's about 3,300 franchise concepts. There's probably a couple thousand people looking at franchise concepts at a given moment. And there are probably over 2,000 franchise brokers. To me, the math is pretty easy. There's too many.
So what's the solution?
You know, it's got to consolidate. But strangely enough, you know, I've talked about this so many times, and some people accuse me of well, Joel, geez, you know, you don't want any more competition. And you know what? Franchise brokers that are just starting in their first 6 months, quite frankly, I don't want to sound cocky, but they're not really competition. It's more about some of the franchise brokers that are brand new that have been promised a bill of goods, you know. And if you read the blog post on the Franchise King blog, the title, Franchise Mathematics, How Many More Franchise Broker Networks Do We Need, you'll see what I mean. You know, the ads that you'll see from these franchise brokerage networks, they have fantastic words like small, one-time startup fee, no experience required, professional training, no cold calling. Here's one that's really sticky and tricky, and I'm sure you'll agree, executive level income. Paul, how much is executive level income? What does that number mean to you?
Well, I know what it means in this regard. It means, you know, probably six figures or more. I think the intent is to let them know they can make a lot of money.
Okay, but let me ask you this, Paul. If you joined the X franchise brokerage franchise and you had no experience, but, you know, you came from corporate America and you saw executive level income, and in your mind that meant $150,000 a year.
Yeah.
In the first year, when you don't make $150,000 a year, are you going to go after them?
I agree. I mean, it's not a good situation at all. And then they put in there, you know, work part-time or full-time.
Part-time or full-time. Oh, sure.
Well, the thing that gets me, too, is where they talk about, you know, leads being provided.
You know what kind of leads they are?
Probably about 5 months ago, coincidentally enough, I had five different individuals from different brokers that contacted me about some franchise sales coaching. And I usually don't do a lot with franchise brokers beyond,
Thanks a lot.
But the thing was that was really neat, especially since there were five almost simultaneously, I asked them to give me five leads, their five most current leads, which they all did, and none of them knew of each other.
Right, you told me. Go ahead.
And they were all different leads, and I spent the weekend following up on the leads on their behalf. And 18 of them, of the 25, basically told me to go where the sun doesn't shine because they had already been contacted anywhere from 15 to, one guy said, 42 different times in the last month by different brokers and individuals, which told me the leads are being regurgitated time after time.
Of course they are.
The second part of it that was unique was that five of them had filled out some type of profile to determine what type of franchise would be best for them. And and several of them had done multiples and gave the same answers and got different results. But one of them in particular, this man was a little bit spry, and he filled out a profile the exact same way, two different times with the same company, with a fictitious email address and a fictitious name, but did it exactly the same and got totally different results from the exact same profile. So basically, when it was all said and done, all 25 of them said to me, well, two of them didn't because two of them were kicking some tires, but 23 out of 25, 92%, said to me, there's no way I would buy a franchise. Y'all are a bunch of used car salesmen.
Yep. That is exactly the point of my article. Now, full disclosure, I'm a franchise broker. I'm a franchise consultant, whatever you'd like to call me. I like the word consultant better. It makes me feel classier. But you know what? That's one of the reasons that I left a certain unnamed franchise network that I was with and became independent 2 years ago, because the leads were not leads. You know what they are? Really, the word that I used was curious people. Okay? And that's okay. That's okay. You know, to me, a franchise lead is not someone who says, yeah, Do you have any posters of Michael Phelps for the subway thing? I mean, come on. So when things are advertised that say leads provided, be careful and make sure that the leads provided are quality. Now, there are, you know, it's the 80-20 rule. I think 20% of us are really good at what we do, and we really want to put our candidates' interests first. But the other 80% are trying to get their money back. You know, they put 50 or 60 grand into a franchise brokerage. Man, they're just hoping to get lucky. You know,
well, I'm glad you talked about the 80-20 rule, because there are some just fabulous professionals within the brokerage industry.
Absolutely.
But I think a lot of it is just, you know, a lot of redundancy and not all the concepts are great. I mean, one that I'm dealing with, one of this group, is out of the D.C. area, and I asked her, I said, you know, how many concepts do you represent? And
right.
She came back with me, and she said 437.
Oh, yeah. That's not quite enough, I don't think.
No, probably not. And I asked her, and I said, you know, how do you disseminate? How do you choose? And she said, quite frankly, whoever I think could pay me the fastest and whoever I think I can sell them the best. So I don't like the model. A lot of people are going to scream and holler. So be it.
I like the model. It works for me. But I'm not a franchisee anymore.
Right, exactly.
I do my own thing. I can choose who I work with. I work with about 50 or 60 franchisors. That's all I need.
Right, exactly. And, you know,
anyway, if anyone wants to read it, you know, and if you're in the brokerage industry, let me know how you feel, positive, negative.
Well, I think anything else, there needs to be some consolidation, and probably 80% of them need to go away and leave the remaining 20% to deal with it. You know, and that just leads into, you know, franchise candidates of today. I mean,
that's
you
right.
know, I wrote a blog article on there. You and I have discussed it, you know, the changing face of franchise candidates. You know, and looking at today's franchise candidates, I mean, you know, we know they're more sophisticated. We know they're better educated. We know they're more technologically advanced than ever before. And nowadays, because of the economic meltdown, they're more cautious than ever before, and yet we're creating a situation where they're getting contacted up to 45 times by different franchise salespeople.
Right.
I mean, we're doing that's just doing the industry a total disservice, an absolute total disservice. You know, a lot of times these franchise candidates, I mean, they're bouncing around on the internet, they're being more cautious, and a lot of people are saying, well, you know, candidate is a candidate. You know, back, you know, after the last recession, and people were making 17 and 18% interest on their money market account, when the recession was over, they had a little bit of a nest egg built up, and they took that and they invested it into a business. And they left the principal alone to work all over again and maybe made some more money through the dot-com, hopefully they got out in time. But the thing was, they knew there was a risk getting into business. They knew that there was going to be some trials and tribulations. But, you know, they were, quote-unquote, playing with capital gains. Nowadays, those capital gains aren't there, and they're choosing instead, they're kind of having to resort to using the principal to get involved in a business. So you know what? Failure is just not an option.
It's true.
And failure is just not an option anymore, and that's why they're being more cautious than ever before. They're having to come up with more of their own money because of the credit squeeze and the credit crunch. And it's just a difficult situation. You know, by the way, I noticed on your blog you talked about some of the new things going on with the SBA. Can you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, there's a Senate bill that is being introduced by Olympia. I always want to say Olympia Washington, Olympia Snow. And part of the legislation is raising the cap from the microloan to $50,000 from $35,000. So what that means is people that are looking at smaller loans, now the smaller loans kind of with the cost of living increase kind of thing, could be $50,000 instead of $35,000. So that's a benefit. But even cooler is that they're talking in this bill about putting an online portal in for people that want to apply for commercial loans. So you don't have to, even though it sounds kind of cheap, you don't have to get in the car and use gas and burn carbon and not be green. You can just do it right from your computer and apply at SBA-approved lenders in your neighborhood. I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think it makes sense.
The SBA applications and the paperwork, have they been simplified at all?
I'm sure it's being talked about. The SBA chief in there now, a new woman, seems like the type that will be one to get stuff like that done. I heard a radio interview a couple months ago of her, and she sounds like a real tiger. So hopefully that'll be part of it. You know, strangely enough, I would say that 80% of the people that I've ever helped get into business in the past 8 years, 80% of them did not use an SBA loan.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not that common. And part of it might be because a lot of the opportunities that I work with are not $500,000 opportunities where you really need a local bank that's, you know, approved by the SBA to jump in and loan out $300,000.
Right, exactly. I know from the paperwork standpoint, dealing in the automotive business, when there was substantial investment on, you know, equipment and build out and what have you, the paperwork package was just ridiculous. And I know in some instances, if you weren't exactly perfect, let's say for argument's sake, the package was 30 pages, and you had a mistake on page 8. They literally would look at it, circle that item, close the packet, send it back to you to do all over again. And then if you corrected that and they could send it back and they got to page 12 and it wasn't something they liked, they circled it, closed the packet, sent it back to you again and really, really, really just delayed the entire process. I was talking with somebody yesterday at Kolache Factory, which is a regional franchise here in Texas, and they're saying they actually had some recently that closed within 30 to 45 days, but they had others that were waiting for SBA approval 7 or 8 months down the road, and they're still waiting.
Unreal. It's tough. And you know what? You know, I'm writing for a government website now, and, you know, I guess I should be careful, you know, what I say, but I'm never one to do that. But I, the older I get, I get a little more political, I guess, a little more politically correct. No, it's not going to happen. What I'm seeing is that the lending situation is about the same as it was 2-3 months ago. The lenders right now are being tight. The SBA is being aggressive, but the lenders are not loaning the money. I mean, are you hearing that in Texas?
I heard that. I had somebody that I responded to, I think it was through LinkedIn, that said he had basically gotten SBA approval, but the bank was continuing to drag their feet on actually funding it.
Huh.
I guess we didn't send them enough stimulus money or bailout.
Well, you know, hey, we could always print some more.
Well, here's the thing that gets me regarding that bailout. You know, we loan a bank $45 billion, and I don't want to chase anything up a tree and say who they are, but we lend them $45 billion, and here in a short period of time, they repay it, now, which is wonderful. But in my mind, isn't that, and correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that a $90 billion swing?
Remember about my math skills?
Yeah.
You do the math.
You know,
it sounds wrong.
And it's like, you know, yes, I admire the fact that they paid it back. That's wonderful. That's the way it should be. But what did they do with it in the meantime? I don't think they did anything to stimulate the economy.
Well, they didn't give it to us.
I didn't see my check, did you?
No checks. Not from that, anyway.
What are you going to do? Before you know it, China will be knocking at our door, foreclosing on the White House. What are you going to do?
Oh, man, don't even.
Well, you know, that today's franchisees, you know, are, you know, especially the new ones, I mean, they do have a tough road ahead. You know, and I posted some things online in the different LinkedIn groups regarding, you know, franchisee survival and stuff like that. Did you get a chance to look at any of that? I don't know if you...
No, I don't know if I did yet or not.
I think you and I just discussed it this morning. Anyway, you know, it's in the Q&A section, and it's really been some interesting comments coming back. And one in particular really got to me this morning because they kind of related the franchise situation to that of being a parent. And my question was, how responsible are franchisees for their own success or failure? And this gentleman wrote back and he said, we're winding back to the selection process. He said, it's the responsibility of the franchisor to carefully screen and select the individuals it decides to partner up with. I agree there. We need to get away from checkbook franchising and make sure that the candidate is right for the concept. I agree with that. But he goes on to say that under any circumstances, it is to say that under any circumstances that is not the franchisor's responsibility to ensure franchisee success is the same as saying it's not a parent's responsibility to help their child succeed. I think there's a difference between ensure and help, don't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, you know, certainly I agree that the franchisor needs to do whatever he possibly could do, he or she could possibly do, to make sure that the franchisee has all the tools necessary to succeed. But, you know, the long and the short of it is, it's still the franchisee's responsibility to make his or her own independent individual business work. I mean, there has to be some responsibility and accountability on the franchisees, because they can't just sit back and wait for the business to come in. Build it and they will come just does not work.
No, it's not reality. And I tell people that when I do my seminars. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's a turnkey. Well, yeah, you're turning the key, not them.
You know, speaking about keys, I mean, you know, these places that are open 24 hours, do they have a lock on the door?
Which ones?
Anyone that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Of course they do.
Why?
Let me ask you this. If you have no friends, should you get a Facebook account?
Yeah, there you go. I can make new friends.
How?
How?
If you have no friends, how would anyone know you're there?
Well, what does that have to do with the lock on the door?
I think you need to crack out the calculator and figure that one out, Paul. Remember, don't...
A couple of other questions that I had on LinkedIn, and you and I discussed some of this with Franchise Direct a couple of weeks ago. What are the benefits and risks of multi-unit franchise ownership? That's in the Q&A section, as well as something that, you know, spurred my thought process after reading one of your blogs a couple of weeks ago about some IFA figures. And the question I wrote was, do you see franchising as an integral component in the nation's economic recovery? You know, I mean, is franchising an integral component in the nation's economic recovery?
Yeah, I think it's a percentage. I mean, you know, I think it's a percentage, you know, a pretty good one.
I think so, too, and that's why I'm really disillusioned that some of these lenders aren't really opening up and making these loans and spurring the economy the way they need to. You know, coming back to franchisees doing whatever it takes, we've had conversations about success. We've had conversations about failure. I know I went ahead and elaborated some on my situation when I succeeded and then failed as a multi-unit franchisee. But, you know, what's your thoughts? I mean, what are some of the things that franchisees can do to help themselves in operating in their day-to-day business. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you were also a franchisee at one time, were you not, Joel?
I was a franchisee, but it wasn't called a franchise until a couple of the registration states put a little heat on and the group turned into a franchise all of a sudden. I was a franchisee. My late father always told me that we were franchisees. So the answer would be yes.
Okay, so what type of things do you feel franchisees need to do in order to survive?
They need to get out in the community. I don't care if they have to hire someone to make sandwiches while they're gone in their little restaurant franchise or whatever it is they're doing. They need to go out and shake hands. Need to do some face-to-face, old-fashioned, shoe-leather networking, sponsor a Little League team, do some things for the community that are positive, get a PR firm locally if they can, get involved in social media, because they are the face of the business, and they make the first impression and the last impression. And that's what I do here in Northeast Ohio. When people think of franchises, when people talk about franchises in Northeast Ohio, Cleveland, Akron, Canton, they're going to run into me one way or another. They're going to get referred to me. They're going to see me on TV. They're going to hear me on a radio show like this. They're going to see me in magazines, blogs, whatever. But I make sure that I put myself out there. And you have to.
Well, you know, too often than not, franchisees are of the mindset that they've bought into a franchise system and just need to sit back and wait for the business to flow through their doors. I mean, is that ignorance or is it a perception that they have that are clouding their thoughts?
It's a perception, Paul. And that's why when I talk to people on the phone before we meet in person, if they're local, if I talk to them on the phone before we set up a formal consultation, you know, anywhere in the country, I make sure they understand what franchising is and what franchising isn't. And if their expectations are not realistic, I won't meet with them. I won't consult with them. There's just no way. I'd rather save them a couple $100,000 and have them be mad at me, well, he won't even talk to me, than help someone get into business and they fail after a year.
Well, where does arrogance come into play? Because I know I've talked with some franchisees, and it seems like the greater their investment, the more arrogant they want to be that, you know, hey, I spent all this money, and I'm doing what I have to do to make the brand more recognized. So, therefore, you know, it's the franchisor's responsibility to get the business in my door.
Well, you know, though, I have to say part of that is correct, because if the franchisor is going to sell his or her franchise offering as something that is fairly well branded, and the reason we want you to buy this is because we bring, you know, a system and our presence and marketing advertising, then they better help bring people into the door, because that's what I'm buying.
But are they solely responsible for bringing people in the door?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. But remember, you know, whoever invented that word turnkey and put it next to the word franchise really blew it, because a lot of people think that they get to open the door in the morning and everything will be just ducky and the cash register is going to ring because it's a franchise. It doesn't ever happen like that.
No, you know, and I'll relate some, you know, looking to the people that haven't read my blog article, which is Get Off Your Ass for Business Success. You know, years ago I was working with a franchise group on a pretty complex marketing project. And ultimately the project was a success. But as, you know, again, looking at the 80-20 rule, we had five franchisees that, you know, just did not embrace the strategy and were not, of course, instrumental in executing the plan. And basically, they just couldn't get out of their own way. And of course, they didn't realize the positive results as other franchisees did. And as often is the case, the franchisor requested that I work with the franchisees, these remaining franchisees, and try to ascertain the root of their problems and come up with a plan of action to move them forward. And, you know, right then and there, I mean, that first of all, you know, because actions speak louder than words, and the franchisor was paying me to help them, they were genuinely concerned with the franchisee's level of success, because they could have easily turned their back at that particular point and said, well, they don't want to follow a plan, they don't have to, they're not going to succeed. And so I admired the fact that they stepped up even when the tools were available and didn't use them to go the extra length and make sure that the franchisees had every opportunity to succeed as possible. I mean, do you see that a lot in the franchise organizations you're working with?
Yeah, you know, that's why I'm careful who I work with, you know. My relationship has to be so strong that if someone that I help get into business calls me and says, you know what, I don't think they're doing what they said they were supposed to do, I can call the executives and say, you guys, what's going on? You gals, what's going on? Because it's a win-win. You know, franchising is a selfish business. The franchisor wants the franchisee to succeed so they can make more money. The franchisee wants the franchisor to stand behind his or her brand and process so that he or she could succeed. So it's got to be a win-win. You know, I always tell people, you know, some franchise companies may be really, really good at selling franchises, but as soon as they get the check, you can't find them. You know,
yeah, it's funny you mentioned earlier
to franchise owners.
Right. It's funny you mentioned the 80-20 rule before, because in this particular case, the group that I was working with was 25 different franchisees, and five did not participate. There's your 80-20 rule. And to make a long story short, the franchisees that didn't participate, their sales actually represented the bottom 20% of that group.
Surprise and shock.
It is a surprise and shock. Well, you know, and I hate cliches, but I'll have to use one here. It basically, in every one of the situations with these five franchisees, it came down to the franchisees working in the business as opposed to on the business. And as I say in the article, you know, mix in some procrastination, mix in a little bit of entitlement attitude. And, of course, you know, more than anything at this stage of the game, because I've been there and done that, so I know I can say this, total denial. And then, of course, the recipe for business failure, you know, is complete at that point. You know, so, you know, what do you do? What convinces them to take the step and do something for themselves to complement what the franchisor is doing in order to succeed? So,
can I throw – yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, actually, throw it in.
Yeah. There's only a very small – let's say 5 or 6% of the listening audience out there that is going to know kind of where this came from, but you mentioned that word denial. I like to tell people sometimes that denial is not a river in Egypt. And it's true. Now, what? Franchising is what it is. It's not perfect. Franchisors aren't perfect. Franchisees aren't perfect. You know, people that are trying to pioneer this social media thing and into the franchise world like us, we're not perfect. We're going to blow it once in a while. But, you know, being transparent and saying, whoops, you know, I was wrong, let's fix this, is really, really necessary if you're going to be a franchisor these days.
Well, you know, here's what I found out about the working in the business as opposed to on the business. Basically, these franchisees were compensating for their path to failure by being at the business location longer hours, spending more and more time taking care of customers, while spending less and less time on anything else. All five of them claimed to be working harder than they ever had before. Now, was it because they had to cut payroll and do the jobs themselves? Well, ironically, that was not the case, Joel. I found employees standing around while the franchisee actually did the employees' jobs. Often I witness franchisees literally stepping out in front of the employees to take care of the customer. And here's the sad thing. And maybe it's just denial. Maybe it's just not knowing what to do and just being in a real crappy situation. But basically all the franchisees were preparing for failure but didn't want to be considered the actual cause of the failure.
Well, of course not.
Right.
They have to accept responsibility.
Well, it even took it a step further. He said they felt that by putting in the longer hours, they would be seen, quote unquote, seen as doing everything they possibly could do to make the business success. And therefore, when the business finally crashed and burned, they could not and would not be blamed for the failure.
Huh. Interesting.
It's very interesting because of those franchisees, okay, all but one of them was anxious to listen. We came out with a plan. We got firm commitments from them, from the franchisor as well, to assist where they could to improve the situation. And the one franchisee that didn't want any help or refused just was thoroughly convinced he would fail, and there was nothing else that anybody could do to change his situation. Let me even go a step further, because the day that I met with this franchisee in College Station, Texas, where Texas A&M University is, it was in the middle of August. It was 108 degrees outside.
Wow.
It was an automotive business. I walked in, and I met the gentleman, and I got talking with him, and the place was just immaculately clean. There was nothing wrong with it. The technicians were perfectly dressed and groomed. Everything looked great. But the doors to the office were open, and the air conditioning was off. And it was 108 degrees. And one of the things that we did in the chain that I was with was encourage customers to remain with their car to be part of the process so they understood and were aware completely of what was going on with their car. How many customers do you think would sit in an office when it was 108 degrees outside without any air conditioning?
Exactly.
Well, let me take this a step further, and this really epitomizes how sad this situation was. So I asked the franchisee, I said, why isn't the air conditioner on? I'm thinking he's trying to reduce costs. And in turn, he said, well, it just stopped working. When did it stop working? Well, 3 days ago. Well, let's go see what's wrong with it. So not being an AC tech myself, I start playing around with it, and that didn't do it. You know, playing around with the thermostat and, you know, the obvious. So we walked out back behind the business, and I looked at the air conditioning unit. And if anybody is aware of Texas insects, we have a major fire ant problem in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
It literally was a mountain of fire ants that had grown completely through the air conditioning compressor.
Wow.
Now, during the course of conversation of trying to get this gentleman on track, I'm trying to relate to some of the things he did for a living prior to becoming a franchisee. And for 25 years, he had held one job, and you know what that was? He was an air conditioning technician.
Oh, geez.
And he just was of the mindset that there was nothing that he could do to change the situation, even including getting the air conditioner to work.
Wow.
Basically, had given up.
Wow. That's sad.
It is. Now, of the four remaining franchisees, they all decided to move forward. They agreed that failure definitely could not be an option. We developed, again, with the franchisor, and the franchisor did put some money in this situation towards the effort. And we developed an extremely aggressive, and it was a very cost-effective, get-off-your-ass plan of action, centered around getting outside, as you said, would you call it shoe leather marketing?
Mm-hmm.
Getting outside the business every day to promote their business wherever and however they could.
Hmm.
You know, they all agreed they should have been doing it all along, but always seemed to procrastinate in actually getting the job done. And they attributed a big part of that procrastination to a strong sense of entitlement that they felt the franchisor should have been doing more all along because they made an investment. So, you know, a lot of times it comes back, and maybe, you know, like you said, you educate your clients more as to what a franchise is. Maybe, you know, franchisors need to spend a little bit more time to drill that home. And I think, and here's my personal opinion, and I'd like to hear yours on it. I think they don't drill that home because they're afraid that, hey, this franchisee just paid us $35,000 franchise fee. Now I'm telling him he's entirely responsible for getting his business, you know, in the right direction.
Right.
Or telling them that there are things that are outside the quote-unquote system that needs to be done. You know, I look at that system as nothing more than a roadmap, and you just took a big road trip, and I'm sure you had your plan and your everything mapped out. But, you know, if you saw a sign on the road that said, you know, hey, the world's biggest mud ball, and you thought, hey, let's go take a look at it, you might have veered off a little bit, but you had your map to get right back in track.
Right.
And that's what I think franchisees need to do.
I do, too.
You know, they need to look at that as a roadmap. Anyway, the long and the short of this one was that the four franchisees, here's the final tally, as I put it. The one franchisee sold his business to an individual. Now, this is of the five that didn't participate in the aggressive marketing plan. One franchisee sold his business to an individual he met when spreading the word about his business. The new franchisee became a multi-unit operator and eventually sold the business for significant profit. Before this, it probably would have been a closed location. Two of the franchisees took on partners that they met in their efforts within the community, and all of them are now multi-unit operators and are actually multi-unit operators within several different franchise systems. That's a remarkable turnaround. One franchisee continues to operate her business, and although she's happy that she survived, she never had the desire to open up any additional locations. And you know that one franchisee that just said he was going to fail? He was right. He was absolutely right.
Crazy. It's crazy. It takes all types, right?
It does. It takes all types. It really does. And anyway, let's talk a little bit about, you know, where we're going with changing our name. What are we going to do regarding Franchise Essentials and a new name? You have any ideas?
I really want to do this Italian-Jewish thing, but I want us to be careful. I also want to, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, words like transparency, words like trust. You know, Chris Brogan uses that a lot. Words like, here's the real deal, you know, because I don't think that either of us really sugarcoat things. So those are the kind of things I'm thinking of for a name for this, you know, sleepy, fall asleep after 10-minute show.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know if we should do the bagel pasta franchise hour or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, maybe they would take offense to it. Maybe they wouldn't. I don't know. I'm like,
if they would, they would. No, I'm kidding. Go on.
I like, you know, the bagel pasta franchise hour. I like stuff like that. I mean, there's, you know, there's a skinny meets fat, I be in the fat. I don't know. But I encourage everybody to send either Joel or I an email and give us your thoughts. We'd like it to be everybody's show, not just ours, and represent what we're all about. Well, Joel, we are winding down. I think we have less than 60 seconds, and I want to thank you for being my co-host and for being involved with me on this show long term, and I look for great things, and I'm happy you got back home safe and sound from your vacation. And I don't know if you're any saner than you were before, but certainly you came back safe and sound, and I'm glad for that.
Thank you. And thanks for asking me. I'm really, really pumped to do this.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's another end to a fine show, and we'll see you again next Thursday, same bat time, same bat station. Have a great day and a great week.